You're listening to KOWSLP. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Colin Mutchler, and this is Remembering Ourselves, a look back at the music and culture of our past in order to ground ourselves as we look forward and navigate these challenging times, hopefully with deeper connection to each other and the natural world. Excited for our show today. We've got a special guest, Justin Lindberger from Stewards of the Coast and Redwoods and Monterio. I'll do a proper introduction in a bit, but first wanted to just get my official responsibilities out of the way for Cal's FM 92.5 at Occidental. So first wanted to share our underwriters. Cal's thanks Heidi at shipshapesystems.com for her support of community radio. Heidi works to help clients bring body, mind, and spirit in harmony using a process called conscious connected breathing, a technique that aims to promote relaxation, improvement of mental clarity, and emotional well-being. I could use all of that. She also practices 9D breath work and sound frequency therapy. You can find out more about her practice by visiting shipshapesystems.com. Next, Cows thanks Cloverdale Travel for their generous underwriting support. Cloverdale Travel is a full-service travel company specializing in cruises, hotels, and car rental agencies. They've been serving Sonoma County at their downtown Cloverdale location for over 28 years. They are now booking the Ruby Princess to Alaska, departing August 11th from San Francisco. This 11-day round trip inside Passage cruise includes stops at Skagway, Juneau, Ketchikan, and Prince Rupert in British Columbia. Cloverdale Travel is located at 129 North Cloverdale Boulevard. More information about this cruise and their service, you can reach them at 707-894-5284 or by email at Craig, C-R-A-I-G, at CloverdaleTravel.com. And lastly, we thank SolarWorks for supporting Cows Radio. From the beginning, SolarWorks has encouraged Cows listeners to support local businesses, producers, and providers. Remember, a healthy community depends on a strong local economy. SolarWorks, giving people the power to make a difference since 1986. Solar electricity is even more affordable with a federal tax credit. For more info, visit solarworksca.com or call 829-8282. Thanks to all the underwriters of Cows. Good spirit there. I like that. And last, we'll do a public service announcement. This is for Improv for Life, Sebastopol Senior Center. Join the Sebastopol Senior Center for a weekly event called Improvising for Life, held on Wednesdays beginning August 7th from 3 to 4 p.m. The classes will teach you how to be present, tap into your silly, imaginative, childlike self through improv. Improv's a way of living authentically through an attitude to life that gets us out of our heads and into our hearts. Could all use that. Responding rather than reacting and laughing heartily. All ages are welcome to join. You must register in advance through the Senior Center, 707-829-2440. Classes for non-members run $10 per class and are hosted by instructor Deanne Lamb, who is an avid improver who played and performed as part of improv groups for more than 15 years. Thanks again for all the support from all of our underwriters and sponsors. Cows is a community radio station and could not survive with all the support from everyone. So really appreciate everybody. Again, this is Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler, and I'm here today with Justin Lindberger, who I'm trying to remember when we first met, but it was... My first memory of Justin was actually at the Rio Theater. We were talking at some other event that was maybe the River Remembers event or something like that. Probably met you before then, but I really respect Justin so much. I like him as a human being, and he is the executive director of Stewards of the Coast of Redwoods. And I read on your bio that you had been with Save the Redwoods before that. And welcome so much to Remembering Ourselves. I appreciate you being here. I guess my first question before we jump into the music is sort of like, you know, what? How's it going these days? And I know he's got a bum knee, had a challenge, you know, one of those accidents. But I hope speedy recovery for you there. But yeah, what was it like to have you look back through your music in general, like to have that experience of thinking about being on the show, and what made you say yes?
Well, I think I said yes because it was you, Colin, asking, and I respect you as well and like you as a human being. So that was easy, and it was a bit of a trip. I definitely have eclectic tastes, and the memories that, you know, you are so present through music, you know, are become part of your life, and it's exciting to look back at that and think about, you know, what I was listening to in the different chapters as your prompts kind of suggest.
Oh yeah, let me just say that again for those that are just tuning in. So on each show of Remembering Ourselves, I ask the guests to bring with them two pieces of music to represent their early days before they chose their own music. So like stuff on in the house or that you might hear in the car or some other, wherever you just, from before you chose your own music. And then two songs from your coming of age, like when you really started to fall in love with music yourself and choose your own music and that represent that period of time in your life. And then two more from the recent times, which, you know, you can interpret that as you like. For me, it was kind of since the pandemic, but it could be, you know, now-ish basically to represent your relationship to music now. It's not necessarily music that was created during that period of your life, but, you know, music that meant something to you during that period of life. And, you know, this conversation is about the music, but also about the times, you know, to kind of think about and remember those times in your life and also in our broader culture as a way to remember who we are, both as individuals and as communities, and to, you know, help ground ourselves as we think about these current times that we are facing, which are, you know, traumatic and challenging in their own ways. But yeah, did you grow up in Wisconsin? Is that right?
I grew up in southeastern Wisconsin in farm country. There were a population of about 4,000 then. It's blossomed into a population of about 10,000, but still retains its, you know, farm country vibes. Not a lot to do, not a lot to see. Very different from here that the roads are really straight.
Oh, right, because it's
easy
flat
to drive. That's a huge difference. Huh. And lots of, you know, you had to entertain yourself with outdoor recreation. I was into, you know, lakes, water skiing, stuff like that.
And where is it on the map of Wisconsin for those that know it?
In between Madison, Milwaukee, and Chicago.
Okay, so kind of equidistant between those three huge towns. Yeah. And did you, like, how far was the drive to get to those towns? Did you ever go as a kid, or were you mostly really just staying where you were?
Yeah, didn't really go to town. To this day, my mom is deathly afraid of driving into Chicago and picking up from O'Hare Airport, which happens a few times a year. So yeah, very rural, very quiet and peaceful.
Hmm. And does your family go back in that area for a long time, or?
Yeah, as far as I know.
Right, so they're like from that place for going back.
Yeah.
But you somehow made it out to Northern
California. Only one. All my family's still in Wisconsin. Hmm. I went to D.C. first and then came out to California after that. And it's going to be, I think it would be a really tough place to leave. I don't see that happening anytime soon. And, you know, climate change, the weather's gotten completely different. Growing up, people were out ice fishing. I remember snowmobiling as a kid. And in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, there hasn't been a good season for either of those things.
So oh, really?
The winter rural economies there, I think, are suffering from that. And calling attention to some people, at least, but not everybody.
Not everybody. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So tell me about your relationship to music during those times. Like, introduce the you know, the what was going on in the house or wherever you heard your music of that time.
So I actually talked to my mom earlier today.
Oh, nice.
And because, you know, I really don't recall listening to music as a young child.
Yeah, it wasn't on, like, it wasn't like something that was just part of your life.
It wasn't the record player. It wasn't the radio. It wasn't a big part of my life at all until I really started listening to and hearing music late one night watching television, PBS, because we didn't have cable.
Huh.
And it was the Austin City Limits Music Festival came on.
Nice.
And I, you know, heard a couple bands, can't remember exactly who, but I was like, oh, wow, like, this is really cool. So, you know, it started, I started listening to music in high school. And then in college, one of my best friends was a huge music head, so went to a ton of shows and have listened to a lot of music and kind of always retained, you know, what I was interested in pursuing.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's funny because my own family, my brother, I had a conversation with him, you know, like this, and he has a very different relationship to music than I do, where he really does, he just, you know, the way he self-identifies is like, I don't really have that much of a relationship to music. Like, he, no, once in a while, will be like, I like that song, but it's not like a huge part of his experience. And then on some of the people I have to do, Ryan Miller, who I know you know from Monterio, I remember when I talked to her about this, she was going back, you know, she's a little bit older than you and I, and...
Yeah, I mean, she talked about coming of age in the civil rights area and experiencing segregation and, like, you know, everything associated with that is just incredibly important.
Yeah, totally. But I was going to say something about the, like, the actual experience of music, because I think we take for granted in our current times that, like, it's just like you just grab out your phone and play whatever song you want, as it, and it's like sort of the it's just there, you know. Yeah. Whereas I think at some point it was you had to have a record player and buy records, which were probably not that cheap. So it was just like that was like you know you had to be into music enough that was worth doing. I think probably before that it was just radio itself. People had radios in their homes or around. My guess is, you know, or people would come over and play music live, you know, and that's, I think in the old days, that was the only, music was really a live thing. If you had either had people who played music or you didn't, and you either have it in your family or you go visit once in a while people that would play music. But I'm curious if you know, when you talk to your mom, like what their experience of music was, if it wasn't really on the home, did they also not really just, that wasn't part of their life?
Strangely. Yeah. Same with my mom. You know, she listened to Carole King when she was young. She has a couple records, but it just wasn't part of it wasn't an important thing to her, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think about it, I don't know if this resonates, but in my experience here, this is really the first place I've ever lived that's more rural. You know, I grew up, my early days were rural, but then I was like, then I was mostly suburbs growing up and then cities my whole adult life. And then when I moved here, it was in a period of time where I was more like seeking out like the quiet and the sounds of nature. But I feel like if you're a farmer, there's a lot of sounds, you know, there's a lot of beautiful sounds too that are around you. There's just, sound is a huge part of experience, which I don't think people appreciate probably unless you spend time out in nature, where it's just, there's a lot of sounds. So it's not like there's quiet. It's not like no music means quiet. But I'm curious if that resonates or if that's inaccurate.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, any of us really felt like we missed out on anything.
Totally.
You know, through music is a big part of culture, and being in farm country, you know, that's a different culture.
Yeah.
That's not related to music necessarily. Totally. And then it is interesting that, like, my best friend, who I learned so much about music through, you know, his family grew up in, Minnesota around Minneapolis, and, you know, it's like Bob Dylan was part of who he is through who his parents are, and being interested in that and playing stuff and having access to go to the city and go to shows and having that be an interesting thing to do rather than, you know, going water skiing.
Yeah, totally.
Going out for a walk, going snowboarding, stuff like that.
Totally. Well, let me play. So basically, are the I assume the first two songs you chose are kind of representing that era?
Yeah, they're kind
of
in order.
All right, cool. Well, I'm going to play a little bit of a few songs for us representing the early days, which I assume are kind of a little bit coming from your friend that you talked about. Is that right? Are these first two?
This is still pre-college. So
pre-college, like high school. Okay. All right, so I'll introduce the first one, and then we'll play a little bit of the second one too. So this first one is Dance, Dance, Dance from the one and only Steve Miller Band.
My grandpa, he's 95, and he keeps on dancing, he's still alive. My grandma, she's 92, she loves to dance and sing some too. I don't know, but I've been told if you keep on dancing, you'll never grow old. Come on, darling. darling, put a pretty dress on. We're gonna go out tonight. Dance, dance, dance. Dance, dance, dance. Dance, dance, dance. All night long. I'm a hard-working man. I'm a son of a gun. I've been working all week in the noonday sun. The woods in the kitchen and the cows in the barn. I'm all cleaned up and my chores are all done. Take my hand and come along. Let's go out and have some fun. Come on, darling, put a pretty dress on. We're gonna go out tonight. Dance, dance, dance. Dance, dance, dance. Dance, dance, dance all night long. Pick on!
All right, that was Dance, Dance, Dance from Steve Biller Band. And then the next song, which is, you know, I also have a deep relationship with this song, is from Bob Dylan called Hurricane. That's Hurricane, Bob Dylan. I don't know exactly what era that song comes from, but that is a powerful song. I'm here with Justin
Lindenberg.
Lindenberg, thank you. I don't want to make sure I pronounce that right. Welcome back to Remembering Ourselves. I'm your host, Colin Mutchler. We are listening to Justin's early days of his musical journey, even though in reality, in his household in Wisconsin, there wasn't much music going on. It wasn't until he really went to college that he got to have deeper amounts. But he did catch the Austin City Limits on PBS. So shout out to public radio, public television, public access TV for bringing Austin City Limits to a rural kid in Wisconsin. But yeah, maybe share more about like... where did you go to college? Did you travel toward DC area? Where were you?
Minnesota University.
Oh, you're Minnesota. Okay. Yeah. And that was your friend who started to introduce you to a lot of music?
Yeah. So Steve Miller Band and Dance, Dance, Dance was a song I made a music video to in high school.
Wow.
Dance, 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 my friend dressed up as a grandma. and then the other song that we made a music video to was 99 Luftballons from my German class.
I like that song.
Both, you know, songs that I've listened to hundreds of times before and have great memories around. And then, you know, Steve Miller or Bob Dylan was someone that I found in this song, Hurricane in particular. It's a strong, it's really a song that introduced me to protest and a protest movement. And, you know, I heard the song and I was like, well, what's this song all about? And it's about racial justice and protest and civil rights. And through that, I started to learn a lot more, you know, finding books like Revolutionary Suicide by Huey P. Newton. So it was, it triggered a time of exploration for me.
Yeah, and that song was really, that was the opening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. And how old were you when you first heard it?
16, 17.
Yeah, that's meaningful.
Yeah.
That's very meaningful. Yeah, for me, I didn't really have my racial awakening till kind of just as I was graduating college. You know, I was like always like a nice white guy that was like, you know, nice to people. And I knew some things, but it wasn't till I studied abroad in Bolivia that I like learned the alternate history of the Americas and was like, whoa, I didn't learn anything. And then I came back to the United States and realized, oh, I haven't learned anything about people that live like 20 minutes that way. I think the original songs for me were like, I listened to hip hop a little bit when I was a kid, but not much. I didn't grow up with it. And it was like that song Tupac's Changes. And then I started, there was a movie called Slam, this guy Saul Williams, that was like about like the, you know, he was just a powerful spoken word poet that kind of, that was what opened me up to like, wow, like there's so much to be said, but that's cool. 16 years old, Hurricane.
Yeah. And there's a movie that you're remembering me remembering things, remembering ourselves, a plug, the woman that was like a teacher and a black school, and they had the soundtrack for that song for that movie was super good. And there was some Tupac, and it was that's in Law and Order,
Poetic Justice or Poetic License.
I forget,
but it was a story of a teacher. Yeah
And they had a similar song that was like, oh wow, this is so fitting for power and justice, and being music being created through that was something that started to open my eyes and be interesting to me. And also listened to your prior newscasts, radio casts, and Talib Kweli and J. Cole were hip hop artists that were really telling stories more than anything. And you know, these days I don't think that I listen to the words in music very much.
Yeah.
But back then, you know, there was a lot in there that I really enjoyed listening to and learning from.
Yeah, that's true. I've also feel like I listen less to the words. I do love words and language, but I think especially with young kids and stuff, I'm like music plays a role of mood for me a lot. I'm trying to just enjoy, you know, a certain mood, but I think there's an educative element, the storytelling. The best songs I think do tell great stories. And then were you like, tell me more about your friend that's the one who really introduced you, that you had a, you know, you guys went to shows and stuff, or what was your experience in music during that time?
So in college, you know, I had a really good friend that we'd go to at least a show every week.
Oh, wow.
Once
a week.
A residency at a local bar that we were too young to go to.
Wow.
And had a dance party and invited folks and started being exposed to and listening to music by hanging out with that friend. And with that came a whole bunch of things, including sneaking into music and learning that you could, you know, go to shows. And that's part of the fun. You know, I snuck in to see Sharon Jones. My friend sold her pot. And that's just, you know, one of so many stories about just going to see shows with my good friend in Minneapolis. And it has a really strong theater culture, experiential theater, and also art, you know, just art and music as well. So it was a great place to go to school and, you know, have my eyes open to things like I had never even heard of sushi.
Right.
I don't think until I went to school there, and it's a really international school, lots of people from different cultures, so totally had my eyes open living there and experiencing all of that and just trying to get into things and going to see a lot of shows.
No, it's true. I do still go see live music, but I think what you just shared made me remember like the excitement of being in a scene or like having accessing to a scene. Like there was a certain music or certain types of people that would listen to certain music that were like, I thought were so cool. You know, I was like, I wanted to be like them, or I want, you know, I just felt like, and when you sneak into a show or you get into a, you go to see somebody, it's like you have that experience of like observing people that I just, you know, think are really cool, or, you know, it's unique, a unique slice of humanity.
Yeah. And you know, the movie Parenthood?
Oh yeah.
The theme song to that.
Yeah. What is it? You're talking about the TV show? No, movie. Parenthood. Yeah. What is this?
Anyway, Parenthood, the movie, has a song that goes with it. That band actually stayed at my house.
Wow.
When I lived in college, and I didn't actually get to go see them because I was studying for an exam and came home to my Bob Dylan poster being cut out. Bob Dylan was cut out, and then my friend pasted him on the American flag. You know, that one that one night that I missed having the fun because I had an exam and was rather studious. But yeah, just lots of awesome times musically.
Yeah,
exploring and learning at that point. I would, you know, if I could recreate that in terms of exploration today, it'd be super fun. But I feel like we're too old.
Yeah, no, it's true, right? Well, there's something. I think that's why there's something about. I mean, music is one of the things, but I feel like it could be different this generation that's coming up. Like, I think about my kids that are 9 and 6, you know, and I'm like, what's it like? What's going to be like for you? I'm sure there'll be the equivalent of like whatever that young person wanting to fit in, wanting to be around, you know, open their horizons, learn new things. I'm sure there'll be their version of that, but I'm curious what it will be like. I do sometimes worry that because of the infinite information that's available through the phones and everything else, like it's just like a different thing. It's not so much a real life experience as it is like a click through experience where you can kind of like, you're exposed to stuff, but you don't have that same like full body experience that I think being in live spaces has.
For something to be so powerful that it really takes your attention and you get sucked into it, I feel like that is an experience that a lot of people these days with social media, YouTube, you know, there's much less of that, or it's harder to get through, but there's also a better opportunity for, you know, people that want to share something to get it out into the world, because you can just post something on YouTube or Facebook or
totally
Bandcamp.
Totally. Stuff like that. Yeah. And the other thing that's a positive, that I feel like I'm generally more negative towards those things these days, but I think the other positive I've heard, which is true, is like, you know, if you're not a part of the dominant culture or the mainstream culture and you want to find your people, it's like easier to find, like if you're just fascinated by a particular kind of weird music that nobody else likes, or just like some, you know, strange thing that other people don't like, you can find like thousands of people that also are really into that online. Whereas if you're just in real life, especially if in a smaller town or whatever, like you may not find that many people that are into it. So that's cool. So who are these next few that you chose? Are they like, where are they? What era are they from?
Still kind of the same time.
So this is like during college, basically?
And a little bit before, a little bit after. You know, the Shins were a band that had an album that I just couldn't stop listening to and played on repeat. And it's kind of like, you only need one CD for your car. If you're only going to have one, it's going to be
that. That is a great album.
And then Ratatat, 17 Years, another one of the songs, was something that just got me excited about life and doing things. And
yeah, that one I had never heard before. I don't know them.
It's an album, or it's a, you know, it's a tribute to like being alive, and you know, I would listen to it to get psyched up to,
yeah, the energy of
to
it,
do anything that I wanted to get psyched up about. So there are different well, you know, one's a little more emo and reflective, and you'd listen to it in the winter months, and then 17 Years more of a just an album for, or an anthem for any time.
I'm excited to check out, because that whole album's good, the Ratatat album.
Yeah.
I'm going to, because I literally never heard that, and I was like, I'll play it right now. But the new slang, the Shins, my experience of the Shins actually is related to the Bay Area. So I did not live in the Bay Area at the time when I first heard that song. I lived in New York, I think, and we were visiting a college friend of Christy here in, I think she lived in Berkeley at the time, and he was living in some basement with his college friend, and we went down there, and he had on probably that album, you know. And I just remember being like, I'd never heard of the Shins at that time. And it was like good music. And then when I deepened my relationship to that song was that movie, Garden State, which was like, I don't know when that came out exactly in relationship to the album, probably a few years after that. Or is it about the same?
Around the same time. And starring Zach Braff, who you kind of remind me of a little bit, but also written by Zach Braff too,
I believe. Yeah, I think you're right. He made the whole thing. And Zach Braff has a weird relationship to this area, which you may not know about.
So you can share more about that.
Basically, when the Rio Theater was having to go digital and they didn't have the money, they started a Kickstarter campaign. This is before my era, but that's when we first heard about it. So we kind of helped Don and Susie to raise money on Kickstarter, and then at the very, like, the last person to give money, it wasn't that much, but like it was like almost at the finish line, and Zach Braff was the one who like crossed over. And I don't know the backstory. Somebody was saying it's sort of like he might have been going through some stuff and like wanted to like be a good online citizen to kind of make up for some other stuff he got that people didn't like what he did. But whatever, it was great. He helped the Rio Theater to not go dark and upgrade. But that was, I remember that the use of that song in that movie was very powerful, and it like it struck home for me as I did it. That movie I liked at the time. And all right, let's play these two songs. So first is New Slang from the Shins.
Thank you.
All right, that was New Slang by The Shins, which Justin listened to on the car ride when he's a ski instructor up in for over a year. That whole album, just really great album. But the next song is more for the summer months, more for those upbeat moments when you want to go and get excited for accomplishing something. It's called 17 Years by Rat-a-Tat.
I've been rapping for about 17 years, okay? I don't write my stuff anymore. I just kick it from my head, you know what I'm saying? I can do that. No disrespect, but that's how I am.
That was 17 years, Rat-a-Tat. Great energy. I had literally never heard that song before, but I can see how you use that to kind of amp yourself up in the days of prepping. What were you prepping for back then? Is it like getting excited for a big workout or for going skiing or for a big test? Like
all of the above.
All of the above. Nice.
Driving anywhere, just getting psyched up.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a good, we were talking while we were listening about how just like the different ways you use music, and an album like the Shins album is one of those that I think there's a whole, I feel like since the Shins, there's like still continues to be like great music being created in that direction where it's just like makes you feel calm, you know? And like, I do feel like especially in these times where everything's just continuing to be chaotic and so much going on, it's nice to be able to, to be able to just calm yourself down and just be chill. So you were in the DC area. Is that what you said? So like what's the transition from, how'd you get to California?
A job.
And was it just, what was it? The job before this job?
Yep. And same thing that took me to DC. I went out to DC for an internship.
Okay.
work for a company, and then I, you know, came out to California. I had a couple options for jobs and took one that I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and what was the work? Because I feel like what I read was like partnerships, kind of in the social justice direction, was kind of thing. But what was the career trajectory?
Forestry and land conservation. Oh. When I went up to DC, I started working in land conservation.
Cool.
And my education when I lived in Minneapolis was kind of forestry and environmental science. So I went out to DC and did a bit of time working with forestry and land conservation. Came out to California doing much of the same.
Yeah.
And then kind of have continued on that, but ever getting more specificity. So, you know, when I came to California, I had an option between focusing on Californian
or global work. And I thought Redwoods in California, you know, the work travel there is much better than focusing on broader things and having to wake up early in the morning or late at night for phone calls for Asia.
Huh. So, yeah, I just realized that your mic wasn't very on for the last like 10, 15 seconds. Okay. So for those that are listening, I'm not going to have him repeat all of it, but I was asking Justin about his journey from kind of DC. He studied more like land and forestry and has kind of stayed in that work. But as he moved up to California, getting more specific around this particular region.
Yeah, my work travel since I've moved to California was California Redwoods, so Southern Oregon to the Southern Sierra. And now working for Stewards of the Coast and Redwoods, my work travel is three different parks in Sonoma County. So, you know, I'll go to
So it's more deeply local.
Yeah, I'll go to a conference here or there, but, you know, I don't have to think too terribly far outside of those spaces other than things that I'm interested in and that can be
relevant. And do you like that? That seems like that seems actually appealing at this life stage where it's like you're more rooted and less like bouncing around.
Yep. It keeps me focused on local topics, local issues through work. And we are insulated from a lot of what's happening now with, you know, federally and with public lands. Forest Service just lost 3,000 employees. National Park Service just lost 1,000 employees. And, wow. You know, the people that get hit hardest by that, besides those that lose the jobs themselves or don't get hired for them, is park visitors. So, you know, we have a particular directive to serve park visitors locally, and we can do that as a nonprofit that's supported by community and working directly with the state and not having really any federal funding to
got it. So you're like to worry about. You guys are funded by state and just like private philanthropy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah, I agree. This is, I think I didn't hear when it first got announced. It wasn't until yesterday I was having a conversation with somebody that I realized the forestry was impacted so deeply. It's very sad. I'm curious about the connection between like the local and your origins, right? It's like, I only recently am more in the frame of mind that I think it seems like you've been on the whole time. Like I've always been a fan of being in nature. Like I grew up camping a lot. I always felt a connection to animals and like, you know, but I was busy in the cities with all the humans. Like, you know, I cared a lot about culture. I've always been more of a culture person than like I've always loved being outside, but I did outdoor education. Like I was always like in that spirit of a lot of the outdoorsy people. But I was always my work called me towards like more cultural work, and so I shied away from like the environmental sciences and land and that. And it was only recently, since moving to the Bay, that I'm like more like, oh yeah, like no, that's actually key. Like there's like the deeper relationship to the place you are, and also the like deeper cultural practices of that place, going back through, especially, you know, pre-settler, is like. That's the deeper connection between culture and land is so important, but I'm only relatively new to that world. But I'm curious, like, cause I remember when I first met you, we had a conversation, I think about like a relationship to some of the local tribes and you actually gave me some really good wisdom about it. But yeah, I'm curious, like how does that rootedness in this place of your work allow for like depth, you know, in a way that probably a national thing wouldn't as much.
Yeah. I think there's a huge depth of connection between people and land. And most of my career, that's been working with land managers and people that take responsibility for decisions of what do you do with the place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really humbling thing to have the power to do that. And when people like foresters approach it that way, that's when you get really good land management. You know, there's tribes, there's farmers, there's all these people that, you know, fishermen work the land and cultivate things. There's, you know, basket weavers that they'll tend a bush for 10 years before they can, you know, harvest it to make a basket out of.
Wow.
And that is a really, you know, deep connection. And I think it's brave of you for going in, diving into culture as a career path and working with people, because, you know, it's so much, it's messier.
Definitely messy.
People, democracy, you know, politics, all of those things versus, you know, land is more of a, you know, it's a completely different type of relationship. It is a two-way relationship. It's not necessarily as a parent, but it's so much slower and most of the time less messy.
Except for the floods and the fires besides those. No, but that's interesting. I think about, I mean, one of the projects that's like I've thought a lot about but not really actioned much is about time and about like the different time scales that different species experience. You know, I think we think as humans that like everybody experiences time like we do, but I'm pretty sure that's not true. You know, if you're a redwood that lasts for, you know, over 1500 years, or, I mean, I know we don't think about being alive or experiencing life in the same way, but, you know, at the scale of mountain or the scale of river watershed, we are like the mosquitoes, you know, we're barely even here. And so you do think in those longer horizons. And I think I see it as I see the benefit of it now, like you were saying, like, it's like the slowness is appealing to me now at this life stage. But I think when I was in my 20s and I was like itching to change the world, I was like, we got to get stuff down right now. I mean, like things need to change right now. And like, I was like impatient. I think now that we're in a period of, you know, of deep crisis and breakdown culturally and politically and all that, I feel more nervous about, you know, about dramatic change. You know, it's like, I think about the, you know, moving, like I think some of my experience of some of the ways that the more indigenous cultures collaborate, it is more at the speed of trust. You know, it's sort of like, it's not about how fast or slow in terms of time. It's about how is the health of a relationship, or how is the, and I think that is similar to how relationship to land goes, you know? So I think it's like more like having your cultural practice more aligned with some of the natural cycles. I kind of like that idea now, but historically I was more, just gotta get it done, move fast.
Yeah. And I'll share my favorite quote. The CZU fires, it was the LNU and the CZU, and the Walbridge fire was part of that.
That was 2019?
August of 2020.
20, okay, sorry, yeah.
August 17th or something like that. You know, I woke up camping in Marin Headlands, bike camping with a friend and my dog. We saw the lightning strikes.
Wow.
And a coworker in Big Basin, you know, who dealt with the fires and kind of came out of it and is still working with state parks, you know, shared that the redwoods are resilient and so are we. And, you know, there's so much to be said about that, because we can learn so much from nature, you know, resiliency being a huge part of it. And then, you know, people just get, it's shocking. People can come into Armstrong Redwoods not necessarily seeking anything and have an experience that just moves them to tears. And it's their feeling connected to nature, learning something from nature, and feeling an experience associated with that, which arguably has nothing to do with culture. But, you know, it to me, it's something like you would experience with a cultural phenomenon or experience going to a cool show and just being, feeling moved. You can feel moved through nature, which is really powerful.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, even there's science that like the things that happen in your body when you're walking through the, you know, the forest are very good for you in a similar way that would be listening to music. If you're just joining us, I'm Colin Mutchler. This is Remembering Ourselves. Each episode, we have a guest come and bring two pieces of music to represent their early childhood, two from more the coming of age, and two from now-ish. I'm here with Justin Lindberger, and we've been having a conversation about music and also about, you know, deeper connection through all the different sounds and senses of nature. Introduce the two songs or three songs that you chose to represent this period.
So we have Talking Heads, which is David Byrne, who's a cultural icon and someone I look up to a lot musically and otherwise, just an awesome person. I don't know if you know who Bill Cunningham is.
I've heard the name, but I couldn't describe him.
He was a fashion photographer for the New York Times for a long time, and he rode his bicycle around and wore a blue painter's smock. And David Byrne also likes to ride his bicycle and just rides around New York City and does all this really cool stuff. And, you know, Talking Heads and through David Byrne and what he was interested in got me into a whole bunch of music and other stuff. And then we have Cardi B, who's one of my favorite contemporary rappers. The namesake for first my internet and then my dog. I have a little dog named Cardi.
No way.
And then, as I mentioned earlier, you know, not super into the words in music or don't listen to that as much as I used to, per se. And actually, through David Byrne, got into Philip Glass, got into Oscar Schuster, and a lot of other different contemporary composers who are making music. I wouldn't call it... The best thing to call it is classical music, but it's contemporary classical music, so it's modern with a twist. And they're just coming up with a whole lot of innovative stuff that I find lovely to listen to when you're doing anything, including work, when you don't necessarily need to have your, you know, you gotta focus and can't have your brain polluted with too many lyrics or like good stuff. Like hip-hop.
Right.
I'd love to listen to hip-hop. My little brother is an actuary. He can listen to podcasts at work.
Really? He can, like, do stuff? He's working with numbers, not words, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I
can't.
That's all. Yeah, I agree.
I can't
do that.
To words.
No, me neither.
Words at the same time?
No, I feel the same way. It's, like, impossible. Whereas maybe that is why. I think I did data entry one of my first jobs out of college, and I did listen to podcasts during that. Maybe it's something about non-word work. Let's listen to a few of these clips and then we'll finish up. So the first I'm going to introduce is, This Must Be the Place by the Talking Heads. Thank you. That's the Talking Heads. The next one is the radio version from Cardi B. I like it.
I like shining, I like $1 million deals. Where's my pen? Bitch, I'm signing. I like those Balenciagas, the ones that look like socks. I like going to the Tula, I put rocks all in my watch. I like texts from my exes when they want a second chance. I like proving wrong, I do what they say I can. They call me Cardi, Cardi, banging body. Spicy mommy, hot tamale, hotter than a Somali. Bird, go, Rari. Hop up the stoop, jump in the coupe, pick dip on top of the roof, flexing on as hard as I can, eating halal, driving a lamb. So that bitch, I'm sorry though, got my coins like Mario. Yeah, they call me Cardi B, I run this shit like cardio. Diamond district in the chain.
Chambean, pero no jalan. Tú compras todas las Jolambo, a mí me las regalan. I spend in the club, while you have in the bank. This is the new religion bank, el latino gang. Está toda servieta, pero es que en el closet tengo mucha grasa. Ya mudé la Gucci pa' dentro de casa. A ti no te conocen ni en plaza. El diablo me llama, pero Jesucristo me abraza. Guerrero como Eddie, que viva la raza. Me gustan boricua, me gustan cubana. Me gusta el acento de la colombiana. Cómo me ve el culo la dominicana. Lo rico que me chinga la venezolana. Andamos activos, perico, pim, pim. Billetes de 100 en el maletín. Que retumbe el bajo, Bobby Valentín, yeah. Aquí prohibido mal, dile Charitín. Que perpico le tengo claritín. Yo llego a la disco y se forma el motín.
That was Cardi B, who Justin has named his internet and dog after. Thank you so much for doing this. It's been nice to chat with you. It always is. But I appreciate you sharing music from your life and being able to talk about these times. And, you know, what is maybe just as we close out, like, you know, how do you look forward in the next, you know, next, this coming period? We're in an insane period. Is there any particular role that you think music will play in your life in this next chapter, either through your work or through your personal art?
Well, through work, we do a summer series called Sylvan Sounds in the Redwood Forest Theater at Armstrong Redwoods. It's the first Friday, May through October. And that was something.
This is new, or did this already happen? Did I miss it last year?
We did it last year, but it was kind of under the radar, and it wasn't necessarily cool. Named as a series. But if you're in West County and you want to listen to some music outside in the Redwoods and all different types of music, jazz, choir, a little bit of rock and roll, we'll have some stuff going on in the Redwood Forest Theater for you. And for me, that was a way to see live music at work, where I get